Bonjour, I'm Crystal and I'm here standing at the gate of Versailles and I'm here to give you the grand tour with our special guest, Madame Pompadour. Okay, Madame, so do you mind giving us a general description of the palace?
Of course not. Okay, so the chateau has 700 rooms and more than 2,000 windows, 1,250 chimneys, and 67 staircases in total. And the weird thing is that there are absolutely no bathrooms, which is weird, obviously, because you can imagine out of 700 rooms, they couldn't actually renovate one of those rooms and make it into a bathroom, which is, I still don't know why they didn't make a bathroom to this day.
Yeah, and I feel like the closest thing to a restroom was the Latona water fountain, which was actually inspired by the Metamorphoses by Ovid. He was a Roman poet. And the story of Latona goes that the mother of Apollo, which is also the fountains dedicated to her, was protecting her children from the insult and peasant of Lycia and pleading with Jupiter to avenge her. The god obliges by turning the inhabitants of Lycia to frogs and lizards, which actually that's what the fountain includes. There's a bunch of frogs on the circumference of the water fountain. There were a bunch of frogs, which represented again the Metamorphoses. And this trend is actually seen quite often by King Louis XIV. This whole idea that he was the Sun King is also represented and the way he built the property. He built the property facing along a east/west axis to follow the sun as an emblem to Apollo.
Okay, so basically I want to add on to that as well. And for example, how you were saying that he made the palace face a certain direction where like it was facing the sun, most likely whenever the sun rose, it faced a certain way. And in his own perspective, like, you know, he saw him, like how you explained earlier, how he saw himself as a sun king, and how you would say in French, le roi du soleil. And then later on, he would also emphasize himself as the state by saying, l'état, c'est moi, basically saying the state, it's me, the state is me. And that kind of like emphasized more like on his power and how he saw himself that he was really, really the true and absolute power and represented France as a whole entire country. And he wanted to represent France as, like, you know, obviously as powerful, something powerful in a powerful country, like I said before. And so later on, he would also have another interesting feature about the chateau is that there's a hall of mirrors. And the hall of mirrors basically emphasizes his power a lot more. The mirrors, for example, back then were super duper expensive, and only like, you know, the richest of the richest could afford tons of mirrors. And also, like, you know, with the Hall of Mirrors, it would kind of make someone feel really overwhelmed.
Yes, it was only natural to feel a little bit disoriented in the palace, as King Louis introduced a lot of things people have never seen before, such as the gardens. They were perfectly built in this symmetry that nobody could ever achieve at the time. The aerial view is more than perfect, and it included lots of vegetation that did not even grow around this area, such as orange tree, lemons, and pomegranates. Some of the trees to this current date can reach up to 200 years old. André Le Nôtre was actually responsible for these beautiful gardens. And actually, a little good fact about King Louis' plants, as we all know, they were mostly orange blossom trees. One thing that a lot of people don't know is that orange blossom is very common around men. They, especially in like women's fragrances, men will smell a fragrance that includes orange blossom and will automatically simply fancy it. They don't know why or how, but it's something that they will generally like without really knowing what it is. Also, this intimidating factor almost of the palace was that actually King Louis separated the palace in wings. The south wing was most commonly named as the Le Prince du Sang, which was the area that withheld all of the princes that had direct heir to the throne.
Yeah, and especially, for example, the ground floor of the central building was reserved especially for the key members of the royal family. So, for example, the apartments of the Dauphine, and the daughters of Louis XV, and the private apartments of Marie Antoinette, and the living quarters of the captain of the guard were also located in the ground floor.
Also, another thing was that the first floor is almost entirely occupied by the battles gallery, which was curated by Friedrich Nefren and Pierre Leonard, which it actually included dozens of paintings that depicted key battles, and the hall contains more than 80 busts of celebrated military leaders.
Obviously, as we all know, like on the opposite side of the south wing was the north wing. And the north wing is where precisely the chapel is, and it rises above the rest of the grounds. And the construction that actually the construction of the chapel was begun by Hardouin Mansart in 1699, and the chapel would be completed by the Cotes in 1710. Now, this chapel would host daily masses and as well as like royal weddings and baptisms until obviously 1789 when the French Revolution began. And at the far end of the wing would be the Opera Royale, which was built until Louis XV's reign by Ange Jacques Gabriel. L'Opera Royale would host the marriage, would famously host the marriage of Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette on May 16, 1770. The Opera Royale would also host the National Assembly from 1871 until the proclamation of the Third Republic in 1875.
A interesting fact about the Royal Opera House is that it actually took 3,000 candles to light the whole auditorium. And now we ease into the must-see features of the Palace of Versailles.
Must-see features of Le Château de Versailles is Le Petit Trion. It was named Le Petit Trion due to it being basically kind of like a little mini version of the actual like Le Grand Trion. And so if you're wondering who had the idea of building Le Petit Trion, it was actually courtesy of Madame Pompadour, or the long-standing mistress of Louis XV. She convinced him to actually like, you know, have him build it, and it kind of like for her it was kind of like a little getaway, a little like place of luxury for herself. Where she just like enjoyed like drinking champagne, eating chocolate, and having some truffle soup as well. Later on, Louis XVI would give Le Petit Trion, obviously to his young wife Marie Antoinette, as a wedding gift, and Marie Antoinette absolutely was in love with this. She was absolutely in love with it, and she loved it so much. She would always go there as her little séjour, which, by the way, in French, séjour is like vacation, like, you know, a day off, some free time. And for her, it was just something where she can just relax and get away from the court and all the businesses that goes on in there. And other than that, like, you know, to add on to that, she would love to do renovations. So she would like add like little details to like the castles, make new sculptures and all stuff. And as most of us know, later on, Louis XVI would be overthrown, the majority of the court would be just overthrown in general during the French Revolution. And so during this time, Le Petit Trion was turned into like a little countryside hotel. And then later on, after after that, like, you know, after the revolution, Napoleon obviously come into power as the new, as the emperor basically of France. And Napoleon would give Le Petit Trianon, would give the Petit Trianon to his sister, actually, his sister Pauline. And then later on, he would give it to his second wife, Marie-Louise. It wasn't until Eugénie, the wife of Napoleon III, that later on the Le Petit Trianon would be turned into a museum dedicated in remembrance of Marie Antoinette.
And now, the historical background.
The whole entire foundation of the chateau was basically built in 1623, whenever King Louis XIII decided to build a small hunting lodge. And then later on, like, you know, he would stay there, like, you know, through night, and obviously do his hunting. And then later on, he would decide to rebuild it in 1631. And so the construction continued until 1634, and this would officially lay the basis of the palace that we actually know today. And besides the pleasure of hunting, the chateau was also used as a getaway place where the king, if he was searching for solitude, he would go over there. And a good example would be whenever he ended his relationship with one of his mistresses, Mademoiselle de Lafayette, which ended in 1637.
In the end, the Palace of Versailles was almost destroyed during the French Revolution, but then after was kept as a piece of historical value. Even today, its striking beauty and architecture is one to go must-see in person. There is truly nothing like it. The reign and power that it encompasses will forever be cherished by all humanity.
Thank you for tuning in today and listening to the Palace of Versailles, featuring me, Crystal, and Madame Pompadour.